the Spot Track Podcast, talking sports contracts, the salary cap, and business of sports.
Welcome into the latest edition of the Spot Track Podcast. Brandon Kravitz here, along with the money man himself, a rejuvenated Mike Jannetty. Mike, good to be here with you, and welcome back.
Yeah, look, it's not often that I get away, and every time I do, something big happens smack dab in the middle of it, but we're back, and better than ever. Should I take the Mike Greenberg statement away? I'll do it. Let's run with it.
Yeah, I mean, with how infrequently you get a chance to unplug, even if that's not a reality itself, it's still nice. Still nice to get away, spend some extra time with the fam, and remember what it's all about, what you put in all this hard work for. There's a lot of players around the sports world that have been putting in some big time work, and they're getting paid because of it. So let's talk extensions. And I have a nice extension show here today, and we'll start with Drew Holiday of the Boston Celtics. Sort of rinse, recycle, repeat for him. 4 years, $135 million. This is exactly what he did in Milwaukee. Went over there, proved himself, signed an extension. I assume that you love this approach from players that kind of bet on themselves and are able to cash in their chips.
Yeah, I would imagine, Brandon, that Milwaukee wishes they were doing this with Drew Holiday right now themselves. I still don't understand some of the organizational moves that the Bucks have made. And outside of a couple of maybe surprising blowouts, it's been a disastrous, I don't know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks for that organization. So two teams in completely different scenarios, maybe single-handedly because of this player, which is interesting to think about. But now it's Boston's win. 4 for $135 is the early projection. Again, we got to see what that salary cap looks like next year. I spoke with Arkie Smith this morning a little bit about some of this NBA stuff. He's pretty confident it's going to be a traditional backloaded deal. Now, there's some question because he's 33 going on 34, so it'll be age 37 when this thing expires. But because of Boston's current tax situation, which is, as you might imagine, ugly, especially in 2024, he believes it'll be, the lower salary next year, increasing to a near $38 million salary for 2027.
So then this would be, I guess, more of a projection than anything. But the Celtics, like you said, are paying through the teeth for this roster. Next season, the salaries for their stars are Jaylen Brown at $49 million, Jason Tatum at $34 million, Drew Holiday at around the $30 million range, Kristaps Porzingis at 29, Derek White at 19.5, and that's not to mention everybody else that's on the roster, but those are the big names. The luxury tax cannot be friendly to a team that is paying this much to succeed right now.
No, it's ugly. If we include all the empty roster spots for next season, and by the way, we've already started to look at next season at Spotrac because this regular season is really a couple of days from expiring. If we just start to put together a 2024-25 roster for Boston, they're projected to be about 6.5 over the second apron, the one you're not supposed to go over. And it seems like, unless something significant happens, and I don't know why they would do it, that they're going to live there, that they're going to be a second apron team, which is the highest tax grade you can have in this league based on the latest CBA. So that's what this has done. That's what Holiday and Porzingis and Brown and Tatum combined, along with some really nice depth pieces, have done. And again, speaking with Keith this morning, I think they're happy with it. I think they're going to be happy to pay whatever bill they have, because what being over the second apron does is it pigeonholes you in. It doesn't allow you to add, buyout players. It doesn't allow you to acquire sign and trades, certain things that a lot of teams need to operate throughout the course of a season. This Boston team is so deep from 1 through 12 right now, even looking at next year, I don't think they care. They're saying, here, we got our guys. You guys do what you have to do. We're good for next year. Let's just run this thing back, regardless of how the next couple of months work out here.
Yeah, and it's working. They're the odds-on favorites to win the championship. They've won 62 games as of this recording, and they're pretty much good with however this goes, because they've locked up their spot as the top seed in the Eastern Conference. Excuse me.
Yep.
But I assume that this, I'm getting all choked up talking
about this team. This team has you verklempt here.
They're so good. It gets me emotional. Joe Mazzulla, the pressure's on him now, because he's the one, when you're paying through the teeth the way that they are, you can't fire Tatum, and he's part of the reason that you're succeeding. It's this is feels like win now mode for Missoula. Otherwise, they're going to be on to the next.
Some of it definitely is on Tatum, though, right? I mean, he's been considered an MVP candidate now for, I don't know, four seasons in a row. The playoffs haven't exactly gone his way. He's kind of got that James Harden mantra slapped on him a little bit. Now, look, he's not getting bounced in the first round, but I think it's a big next couple of months for Jason Tatum, maybe more so than any other player on that team. But, you know, I'm with you. I think both of us sit here right now thinking it's Denver and Boston's finals to lose, and both have pretty unbelievable tax situations heading into 2025 because they love their teams. So it's something we're going to monitor, but I love that Holiday got this done now, got it out of the way. Didn't put Boston in a situation where there were really any question marks heading toward July where so many of those other teams have right now.
Yeah. And I mean, look, obviously if you're a star player and you don't get it done, then there, some of that blame is going to fall on you, but there's a difference between blame and then actually taking the axe. And I don't think that happens with Tatum. He's still, even if they fall short, and they'd have to fall really short for there to be major concerns about him as the star of this team, he's still 26 years old.
I know.
He's seemingly in the Eastern Conference Finals every single year.
Yeah.
So he's got this team exactly where they need to be. But this is definitely the season they've got to find a way to go ahead and break through. Some interesting free agents pending in the NBA. You said that you and Keith Smith and the folks with Spot Track you're looking into next season. And I think this could be a really compelling summer. And it just feels like we haven't really had one of those recently. So first of all, before I even get into the players specifically, is that the feeling that you have is something you and I have talked about for a couple of years where trades are really what make the NBA transaction calendar go, the free agents, not as much anymore, but this feels like perhaps an old school type of summer with some of the guys that are available.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you start to look around at some of the lists, and I don't think we have ours published yet, Keith is doing unbelievable work behind the scenes right now to kind of put together an analysis ranking for all these players, right? The option players, the free agents, the RFAs. So plenty to come with that. I think the name on a lot of lists right now is Tyrese Maxey, who is a pending restricted free agent. And the reason I'm bringing him up right now to answer your question is this is a very fascinating situation. I had to go back to a November article that Keith wrote on SpotTrack.com to sort of remember where we were. I was actually surprised, having watched him now for 6 months, that he didn't sign that rookie extension. And then I had to read Keith to understand what the heck happened here. This was calculated. It is not an accident that Tyrese Maxey is a restricted free agent pending on July 1st. This is exactly how Philadelphia and Tyrese Maxey wanted it to go. And the reason being is it's going to give the 76ers actual cap space. They only have three contracts right now on the books for 2024, and Maxey is not one of them. Now, there's a cap hold, but that's a heck of a lot less than what his extension is going to be worth, right? They wanted to operate with cap space. They wanted to be a true free agent team come July 1st so they can add some weapons. And then when the timing's right, they can use rights and give Tyrese Maxey his 5-year max extension. Now, that's not going to stop somebody from an offer sheet. That's possible. Somebody could throw a max offer sheet at Tyrese Maxey. So again, this could be the story that keeps on, you know, percolating down into June and July. But it doesn't matter. He's not going to sign an offer sheet. He's going to sign the 5-year extension. He would have done it in October had this not been the plan. So you're going to see this name on a lot of lists. It's kind of a moot point. Tyrese Maxey's going nowhere. He's going to sign his 5-year extension, but he is affording the 76ers a chance to go out and sign with cap space some players to bolster this roster. That is not something we see in the NBA at all, ever, right? Good teams, contending teams, using cap space in free agency. So it's a unique situation to monitor. But if you're a Maxey fan or if you're a team thinking you're going to get Tyrese Maxey this offseason, you should look elsewhere because that's not how this one's going to roll out.
Interesting that it lays out that way. And it almost makes me think that, and maybe this is even factored into Joel Embiid being shut down temporarily, that this isn't the year where they felt like, almost like Boston. We say Boston has to win right now. Otherwise, they have major soul searching to do. This doesn't feel like, based on what you're saying, this is the soul searching year for the Philadelphia 76ers, even though they have an MVP on their roster. They would like to win, but it sounds like they're going to be pushing the pedal to the metal come next season.
Feels like it. 2023 might have been that reset year, which makes sense. I think they kind of, flush the toilet a little bit on the Harden situation. I think that's pretty safe to say if you can remember our discussions back in August and September and how that was going. And they let Tyrese Maxey sort of grow into this role a little bit. So I expect this team to be hitting the ground running come October with, an Eastern Conference that could look a heck of a lot different. But, to use him as a sort of a poster child for the situation of what could be this offseason, yeah, I do think there's going to be some real question marks, right? Are the Warriors going to blow things up a little bit? What happens to this Clippers team that is not unlike the Warriors, right? It's not like they haven't been together for 15 years, but there's a lot of aging veterans that could decide to move on and change scope a little bit. And then, of course, LeBron James. And that's the other name I brought up with Keith this morning in my discussions. The mindset hasn't changed with LeBron. Now, I know Bronny's draft eligible. The Lakers and the Warriors appear to be on a road path to the play-in game. So one of those teams is going to be done by April 20th.
Yep.
So that's going to give us plenty of time to have, the rumor mills load up on what could happen with those organizations. Keith is of the mindset and has been of the mindset for the past 6 months that LeBron is going to opt out, that LeBron is going to be an actual free agent come July 1st. Now, his option deadline is June 29th. And he made it very clear to me that LeBron will take this thing to June 29th because that's what LeBron does, right?
Yes, so that sounds very LeBron.
So I know it's April 11th and I'm throwing a lot of numbers and names out there right now, but we're going to be talking about this for the next 2 months, at least 2.5 months. And there's only one reason LeBron's going to opt out. It's not because of his son. It's probably not because the Lakers are about to blow things up. He just wants the control. He just wants the power to be able to do whatever he wants. And if he doesn't opt out, if he goes into that $50 million salary as sort of a one-year tender, now he can't do anything until the end of the summer. He'll be restricted to do anything until basically September. That's not LeBron James. LeBron James wants to be able to do whatever he wants to do every moment of his career, and he's earned that right for sure. So he's not punting on the Lakers. He's not punting on money. He's just giving himself all of the options on July 1st, whatever that may be. And by then we'll know the Bronny James story, whether he's back at school, whether he's an undrafted signing, whatever it's going to be. And it'll sort of align with where we think LeBron is headed. But I just wanted to get some precursors out there right now with this Maxey situation, with this LeBron situation. That's not to say that Klay Thompson and DeMar DeRozan and Pascal Siakam, some names you have here on a list for me, and maybe even Paul George, if the Clippers decide to blow things up. That's not to say that that's not a nice group where teams with cap space, not unlike the one that you follow there in Orlando, won't be looking at, right? I mean, there's going to be some good teams with cap space looking at names like this in a couple of months. So it's going to be a mixture of great teams, great players that probably don't do too much, and some really nice names that could move around and make this a nice, fun offseason.
Well, look, when we say a fun offseason, we're not talking about the days of LeBron James having a nationally televised show telling us where he's going to play, or Kevin Durant taking over the 4th of July. Those days are over.
You don't think there's going to be a barbershop episode where Bronny and LeBron announce they're going to the Knicks? No? Come on.
Well, Bronny doesn't get to announce that, I guess, unless he's undrafted, then... That might actually work out. The draft buzz around Bronny right now, not positive. I saw him compared to Norris Cole, which is not a draftable player, but ironically enough, played with LeBron James. So maybe that would actually work out best. Bronny just signs with the Lakers as an undrafted free agent. But, those are in their prime, and LeBron even now, those are game changers for your franchise. I think when we look at what a fun offseason can be, it's big names, it's big dollars, and guys that can make an impact, but you already have to have a good team. If you're adding DeMar DeRozan, you don't all of a sudden go from zero to hero, but if you're a team like the Magic, if that's the route that they wanted to go, okay, you're a good team that needs scoring, oh, here's DeMar DeRozan for a bunch of money. Here's Klay Thompson for a bunch of money. And I think that that's the type of fun offseason that we could have in front of us.
No question about it. The
right additive type of player.
Yeah, those are generally the moves that win championships.
Right.
Right. It's that one name that you need to add to your roster with a bunch of young kids that can grow into it. So it's in that regard, right? The OKCs, the Minnesotas, the Orlandos, there's a bunch of those teams sort of knocking on the door, not unlike the NFL, right? We've had Houston Texans and Indianapolis Colts and some of those teams kind of come in front of us now, maybe even the Bears that could just be a couple of moves away. So it's cool that cap space is kind of cool again, right? It's not something I've been able to say in the NBA for like a half a decade, but leave it to Philly, right? The bane of my existence in the NFL with all of their freaking contract structures. Leave it to Philly to bring it back into vogue with the NBA offseason.
Yeah, Philadelphia for years now has been sort of a trendsetter in terms of team building, and they don't even have a championship to show for it, but it's funny that it works that way.
Oh, come on, Nick Foles, come on. That's still in the back of our minds.
I meant the 76ers, not the city of Philadelphia. Right. I think DeMar DeRozan is an interesting one, though, because he is an elite scorer, but he doesn't shoot threes. And in today's NBA, if you're going to pay big money for a guy that you want to come in and add some potency to your offense, you know, I don't want to overuse this, but the Magic are a good example here. That's a team that needs scoring, but they need three-point shooting. So spending money on a guy like that makes sense. And the Magic are not alone. There are a lot of teams in the NBA that fit that category. Okay, we need offensive punch. Okay, what about adding a guy that's overpriced that doesn't shoot threes? I'm curious to see what he goes for as an older player that doesn't really fit what the current style of the NBA is. He's a throwback kind of a player.
I can tell you right now, though, that's Tom Thibodeau's dream. Every single Knicks
what a
player.
Perfect. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Him on the Knicks is perfect. That's perfect.
If they're going to move on from Randall, that's the name you're going to add because he fits into this Villanova offense that the Knicks have been putting together about as good as any player in the league. So that's, I'll give you my April 11th projection right there.
That's great. I love that. Okay. Let's just run down those big names real quick. And you can just tell me if they're on or off the team that they're currently on. Tyrese Maxey. Wheels up.
0% chance he's leaving Philly.
Yeah. Okay, Philly. Yeah, we've covered that one. Paul George has a player option. Is he on the Clippers or another team
next season? It sure feels like everything about that team is riding on this playoffs. Right? If they do the typical two and out or one and out, I have to feel like something's going to give on that roster, even though I've liked that organization for quite a lot of months here. I'm going to say he stays. I'm going to say they try to run this thing back one more time.
LeBron James.
I think staying is still the best option. I believe some sort of extension happens. Can you believe that we're talking about a multi-year extension for a 40-year-old? But I don't know how you don't do it if you're the Lakers. You just have to kind of Kobe Bryant this thing and bite your tongue and give him whatever he's asking for, right?
Yeah, I mean, at some point he's going to drop off. Father time takes us all, but there's not a lot of sign of it. Now, when you watch LeBron, you would have no idea that he's
is it safe to 40. Say, though, that the Lakers are going to make money even if he's in decline? Because people are going to watch to see declining LeBron James, right?
Yeah, of course. They already have experience with this. Yeah. The late, great Kobe Bryant, the end of his career, he was an attraction. Pascal Siakam, he's an unrestricted free agent. I know Indiana wants to keep him. I don't think they would have made that deal if they didn't think they could get it done, but still a question mark.
Yeah, they have to keep him for what they gave up, for what they've now invested in. He stays for sure.
Yeah. Klay Thompson, also an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, Klay's going to be the one that moves. I'd say Klay and both Klay and DeMar DeRozan, I think the next name here on your list, are going to be the ones that move. I know you've had some fun radio conversations about Klay in Orlando. I don't hate it. Yeah. He's sort of found his stroke a little bit again here. I don't know if that's a move he wants to make from a human being standpoint. That's to me the only downfall. Does he want to come to the East Coast? There's certainly a fit there. There's no question about it.
Yeah, definitely had that conversation. Donovan Mitchell's been a name that I've been talking about too. Now he's not an RFA or an unrestricted free agent, but he is entering the last year of his contract, the player option in the year following, but he's going to want an extension. And if things don't go well in the playoffs, do you think that he could be a guy that other teams look at and say,
yeah,
almost like a Siakam situation where the extension's not going to happen. These two sides, it's not a great marriage. So the Cavs have to move off of him and probably have to do it at a price that they don't love, but you get something for a guy that you would otherwise lose.
I think he's at the top of the trade list right now. If we're talking about superstars that could be on the move, he's probably at the top right now. There's a bunch of stuck teams that I think he'd be a nice fit for. I put Brooklyn sort of in that list. I don't know what the hell they're doing, right? They have messed up so many of these tradeaway superstar moves, and they're just not a semblance of a real team. They've got nice players, but they don't complement to be five players that can win basketball games. So some sort of shakeup with a player like Donovan Mitchell could make sense. There's other teams as well. But I do think he's probably at the top of the big time blockbuster trade list, but you're right. It won't have any kind of connection to what Cleveland had to give up to get him. If you remember that unbelievable move.
Right. Yeah, no, it's not even going to come close to that. And NBA trades, I think within the last year, these teams have gotten a lot smarter and more frugal with what they're willing to give up. Let's switch over to the NFL. The Jags are making it a mission to solidify their defense. Good to see them putting their efforts somewhere, because they are certainly not doing it to help their quarterback, Trevor Lawrence. Josh Allen, 5-year, $150 million deal, 88 guaranteed, right behind Nick Bosa in terms of the edge rusher position. Is that in line with reality for you? It's a hefty extension.
I'm going to get on a soapbox here a little bit, if you don't mind. I know.
Yes, I love the Mike Jannetty soapbox. All right. Let me sit back here.
We had a chance to get our hands on the details of this one pretty quickly. So it's not quite 5 for $150. It's about 5 for $141 from a base value. And there have been certain individuals that have been hammering, you know, the reports that this was a 5 for $150 because it takes you from $30 million a year into not $30 million a year. Okay. So I understand that the agent wanted to make sure that this was 150, blah, blah, blah. Of all the contracts, right, that the NFL has to report and that the Schefters and the Rappaports of the world have to report, right? All of them get reported as max value or up to or whatever we're going to say here, right? This is not the contract that people should be dying on a hill to bring this discussion up about, okay? Yes, it's 141 base value, except for all of the incentives built into this, the 8.75 of incentives, are right now likely to be earned, right? Because Josh Allen just had the year of his career, 17 and a half sacks, played all 17 games. So all of his incentives for 2024 are likely on the cap right now, likely, which sets himself up to, you know, make close to 150. So yes, there's a discrepancy between the base value and the max value, as there is with every major contract in the NFL. You know, you and I have talked about fluff for, I don't know, 6 years now. This is not the contract that we should be dying on for it, all right? Because there's actually a really strong chance that Josh Allen makes 150. So I just wanted to get it out there. This is not the one, all right? This is a nice contract. It's a nice win for the Jags to keep him around. I want to talk about the timing of this one with you, though. I know this is a team you follow as well.
Yeah.
You mentioned that, you know, Gabe Davis and whatever else they've done offensively isn't exactly putting butts in seats for the upcoming season, right? And maybe more concern for what Trevor Lawrence might look like as he enters his walk here. Getting this done now, because these tag players have until July 15th. We do not see this many franchise tag players sign this early, this far away from that deadline in normal years. We've seen, I think, 85% of these guys sign extensions already. This one specifically freed up like $13 million of cap space for the Jaguars. And I think that's notable, Brandon. I think that there is a calculated reason for this getting done. And maybe the Jaguars themselves had to force themselves into a little bit more guaranteed at signing, because it's a nice price. It's 76 and a half guaranteed at signing. That's up top three, defensively speaking, all time. All right. So this was an impactful deal out of the gate. It's done. It's on the books. It's April 11th. They're probably two offensive linemen away. They're probably a wide receiver away. I think they're definitely a running back away. So there's time for that. Now, are they going to wave for a free agency for that? Are they now in the Brandon Ayuk conversation that I think some of these fringe contenders like Jacksonville and Buffalo and maybe Indy are in? Yes, they're in this conversation. expectations. So the timing of this more than anything says to me, well, they're not done because now they've got ample cap space. Maybe I think they're top three in the league still, if I had to look quickly. There's time to get more done to fill out this roster. And I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you're sitting locally with this one, I don't think a Trevor Lawrence contract is coming anytime soon, whether it's late summer or they're waiting till next year. So I would continue for them to be aggressive. And it's about offensive line and weapons right now, whether that's draft, whether that's free agency, whether that's trade.
So that's where I think this upcoming season is so interesting in the way that they have moved through this offseason, mm-hmm. because as it stands right now, it's a little bit like the Tua situation. We need to see it. Yeah. And Tua showed up. They were disappointing at the end of the season, but he was the star you were looking for.
You're talking about Tua this time last year?
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
that's right.
This time last year, it was like, okay, yeah, Tua's good, but we still haven't seen him hit that next leap. I think Trevor Lawrence, much of the same. They want to pay him, but yeah. I don't think they're ready to do it. And there's a little part of me that's thinking, like, is it almost like spiteful and saying, we thought you were the guy. Let's strip this down a little bit and just see if we can simplify things and see how much of this we can actually put on you, because we're about to give you the most money in NFL history if you can show up and show out. Now, that's probably not the way that teams operate. The realistic side would be, I mean, yeah, maybe that's a thought, but
it is a good thought, right? Because they didn't re-sign Calvin Ridley. They are stripping some things down, and maybe there's a draft pick coming, but I don't disagree with what you're saying.
Maybe it's not so crazy.
Trevor Lawrence has not elevated a roster yet, you know? So if he's going to do it, it's going to be something like this.
Right, exactly. And I think that if you pare things down and then he's able to excel, you get a clearer view. And that's what Miami didn't do. You know, Miami got what they were looking for from Tua. They also
built a fantasy team.
They gave him a Rolls Royce to drive and went, oh, you're a good driver. That's great. It looks like the Jags are going in the opposite direction. We go, okay, let's actually strip this down and see what you've got.
You know, and you know why this is brilliant, and I'll bring it back to some money conversation because that's what we have to do here. That's how things have to work if you're going to give a quarterback $50 million. Josh Allen's about to see it. Patrick Mahomes has been doing it for 3 years now, right? You cannot have a fantasy roster of weapons and a $50 million quarterback in this league. This is not how it works. Now, the salary cap's helping a little bit now, right? The balloon and where things are headed over the next couple of seasons. But maybe Jacksonville's just putting the cart before the horse. All right. We know if this contract's coming that these are the kind of weapons we're going to have to deal with. Rookie contracts, mid-level free agent contracts, and that's it. Right. And that's what Evan Engram and Gabriel Davis and Christian Kirk are. They're mid-level contracts at their respective positions. So maybe they're just saying this is what it's going to look like. All right. We're not going to give Calvin Ridley $60 million guaranteed. All right. If we know that we're giving Trevor Lawrence $150 million guaranteed in the next 18 months. So maybe there's more chess than checkers happening here, like you're kind of alluding to in saying, look, man, there's not going to be a Tyreek Hill on this roster for you. It's not going to happen. That's not what we are from a franchise standpoint, and it's not what we can operate with if we're going to pay you top dollar. So maybe we should be giving them more credit than we have been, because you're right. Miami is not sustainable to the point of where Jalen Waddle at some point this summer may be a trade candidate, not an extension candidate, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it very well could be the way that they operate. We just don't see a lot of teams with quarterbacks that are still on rookie deals say, let's actually strip this down before we beef it up. I do think they're a candidate to add Brandon Ayuk. They sit at 17 in the draft. It's a wide receiver loaded class. They could very well go that route. Those are two very different decisions in terms of your viability right now. But they've fallen behind the Texans in terms of weapons. I don't think anybody would deny that. All right, I'll let you decide. Do you want to dive into the Derrick Brown
contract? Nah, skip it. It's a nice contract. Okay. Carolina's been aggressive in both the trenches. I'm not going to fault them for that. That's what they should be doing right now. I'm not super sure that they're going to take any kind of steps forward this offseason, and then what happens, right? Then what kind of Bryce Young conversations are we having? But I like a little bit of what's happening, but probably not enough to make an impact.
All right, let's dive into our quick hits. I'm excited to get into a couple of these with you. Biggest storyline for you heading into the Masters, it starts today as of this recording, And what is a green jacket worth to these guys, financially speaking?
I mean, if a live player wins it, right? A pay cut? Right? I mean, if John Rahm and Dustin Johnson are recent winners, right? I mean, I don't know. It's such a weird dynamic. I like seeing all these guys back together. I love the par three tournament, by the way. It's one of the best things televised in terms of sports. Yeah. It's really a good watch. The purse is solid. I mean, the prize money is like $18 million. So this is obviously one of those events everyone wants to be to, and we'll sort of see how it all shakes out. For me, the storyline is Scottie Scheffler a real dude? Because I think he's done enough now to win over a lot of people, myself included. He's not exactly Mr. Polarizing, right? He's not going to be grabbing the headlines just by showing up at tournaments, but he's grabbing headlines by gutting things out and essentially taking this number one ranking and running with it. So the PGA Tour certainly needs that. But if John Rahm comes back and starts winning these majors and taking them away from PGA players, yikes, right? Yikes.
Yeah, no. As long as Liv is in existence, that's always going to feel like the biggest storyline heading in.
And by the way, we're a numbers show, and John Rahm claiming that Liv should go back to 72 holes when the name Liv stands for 54. That's probably not a great look, right? I mean, that's why you're called Liv, right? I don't think they're going to change that too much.
You know, I didn't realize that until this moment. I probably shouldn't have even
said
that.
That's what we're here for. That's what we're here for.
Coach Cal, John Calipari, now at Arkansas. And, you know, at first I thought, well, this is an awkward sort of a fit. It doesn't line up for me. Until you start to take a look at who the top boosters are at Arkansas. Yeah. John Tyson, who's the head of the Tyson Chicken family, Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, and the Walton family that owns Walmart. This might be the biggest sleeping giant in college athletics in an NIL era. Would you agree or disagree with that statement? And I'm not just talking about basketball. I mean everything.
Yeah, I've seen so many pieces about how Calipari's downtrodden and sad, and he feels like he's let Kentucky down, and that's the only place he wanted to be. Come on. We've been following this guy for 25 years. I mean, this dude was an absolute monster back at UMass, right? When we knew all this stuff was going down with the Cambies of the world. We were all playing that team on the video game. Come on, right? This guy's not going anywhere. He knows what's happening here. He is playing the part. He is winning the Oscar right now, right? Taking that lonely road from Kentucky down to Arkansas as if he's got his tail between his legs, and he's taking the pay cut, right? $7 million a year now. That's what the contract calls for. Some bonuses if he gets into the tournament. The contract is making this thing look like it's just one final step in his career before he walks away into retirement. I'm with you. I think this guy knows exactly what the hell is going on. He has compiled a set of buddies that have billion-dollar checkbooks waiting, not million-dollar checkbooks waiting, and he's going to get whatever the hell he wants. Now, he's not going to make himself as much money as he was making in Kentucky. Oh, well, right? I mean, he's been doing this for three decades. He is as rich as they come. The other side of this is this. There's going to be four Kentucky players drafted, Brandon. Four. Right? I don't care that they got bounced. This dude continues to do it. So no, he's not going to be winning championships, I don't think. His style of coaching and the way he constructs rosters does not do it. It does not win NCAA championships anymore. And that's just the way things work. And I don't think he's going to change at his age. But he gets dudes paid across the board. And all he has to do is, all he has to do is make Arkansas relevant, which is the point here. And he has done his job. So I think that this is, you're right, sleeping giants, checkbooks waiting. They know what this is all about. And it's not about Final Fours. It's just not. It is about reinvigorating an organization that is not about basketball. And he will do that. He has done that in every area he has gone.
And it's not like they haven't had success before. But in today's world, I would... Don't sleep on Arkansas. That's our rally cry here. Caitlin Clark set to enter the WNBA, which is a WNBA draft, which is in 4 days. Question about her contract structure. And I've been wanting to ask you this for a couple of weeks now. Is it possible that she could walk into the league office with her agent and say, you know, that's nice that you're paying these wonderful female athletes the way that you are. I'm worth way more. You are now, you're all of your teams in your league are promoting games around my presence at these arenas. I saw the Phoenix Mercury already selling tickets for a game against the Indiana Fever. They haven't even drafted Caitlin Clark yet.
Yeah.
Is that doable in the way that the WNBA is structured?
It's not.
They collectively bargained against things like that.
Yeah, it's all set in stone to the point of where I know exactly what her next four salaries are going to be, or at least three before the option kicks in. It's just how it works. It's formulaic, and every league not named Major League Baseball, which my goodness is its own mess right now, has this rookie wage scale in place. So we know exactly what she's going to make in terms of on the court. And anything you're talking about is certainly on the table for every other opportunity humanly possible, right? So she should be going to organizations. Her PR people should be going to organizations in all of these other WNBA cities and locking in local sponsorships, because she's going to be the biggest draw when she shows up for whatever one or two days it is, right? 36 of Indiana's 40 games are going to be on TV, or at least on a streaming network somewhere. That's unprecedented already, right? There's more television games for the Indiana Fever than there are for the Las Vegas Aces, who are back-to-back title champions, right?
Yeah, and the super maybe team.
And maybe have the best player and the best coach in all of women's basketball. So that's what Caitlin has already done. It's just about sustainability, right? Because if she can remain relevant for even 1 year in this league, we know what she's going to do to the league itself. And then we start talking about some serious off-the-court stuff, right? Some Mahomes-type stuff in terms of what she can earn, because like I said, it's 76,500 next year. It's 78,000 the year after that. It's almost 86,000 in year three. And then we can talk about an extension that's only going to max out at about 300,000 a year. So it's just where we are. It's just where this league is. And I can tell you right now, this league is leaps and bounds better than it has been even just a decade ago. So it's growing. It's in the right place. Hopefully this unbelievable draft class in terms of popularity can really push things forward, because then with the next CBA, some of this rookie wage scale stuff can then take itself forward as well.
Yeah, it's a strong draft beyond just Caitlin Clark, but she is certainly the top dog in that regard. Last thing here, Jackson Holliday's clock starts now for the Orioles. He drove in a run in his first game as a pro. Impressed with the Rook's debut? I got my Orioles shirt on now as we talk about
this. I know this is your team. I'm going to give you an answer you're not expecting. By the way, I love it finally that he's here. I mean, he should have made a freaking team out of camp, but that Norfolk team, I mean, the AAA team for Baltimore, I was watching the stats for it every day, like a freaking, 1985 newspaper box score nerd, right? I at some point I was going to tweet, I hope there's a camera crew following this team, because this might be the best minor league team in the history of baseball.
Yeah.
And now, of course, that's diminished because Jackson Holliday's playing second base for the Orioles. But I like everything about this. I just don't want the Orioles to screw this up, man. They have so much going for them right now. Please don't screw this up. Please put every dollar humanly possible into this team for the next 5 years so that they can at least look like the Houston Astros. That's got to be the hope here, right? I mean, that's absolutely what Houston was. So I just want
having new ownership well. Makes me feel totally different about this. I think that
local ownership, it's all there for them to have this thing. I just want it to work out. So I'm glad he's here. I'm bummed that Norfolk took a hit, because that was, man, I went to a minor league baseball game last night, Brandon. I sat with 100 people in Buffalo, in the city of Buffalo, and watched, Robert Gazelman throw some curveballs to some Buffalo Bisons. But I'm into that stuff. I'm a huge prospect guy, and whatever Baltimore has going for them is eating me alive right now. I'm all in.
Yeah, best young team in sports maybe right now. Check me out on Twitter at Brandon Kravitz. And if you're looking for a podcast assist, audio production, content marketing, let me be your guy. AuthenticAudioPro.com. You can check out more details there. Most importantly, though, hit subscribe and rate this podcast. If you have made it this far, you like what you hear, and we don't blame you. SpotTrack.com for all of the latest in the sports contractual world. Mike, always a pleasure. Good to be back. We'll chat next week.
Thanks, sir.